Welcome to the But Here We Go podcast, coming at you from But Here We Go Studios in Dallas, Texas. What are you going to say?
I was like, wow, like whatever. Like, imagine one day, like, we're not in But Here We Go Studios. And then I was like, wait, we have recorded podcasts outside of the studio before.
We've recorded some
and
outside.
And by studio, I mean, we're sitting on the floor of our living room.
What happens if we get a real studio?
Do we rename it? That was my question.
Do we rename But Here We Go Studios?
Right. Or do we call it like something else?
We could rename it. Not this, because this is But Here We Go Studios.
Right.
But if we ever create a new studio.
Right. Or maybe we just get so big that we rent studio space from someone else and we use their studio.
Maybe. But why would we get so big that we rent studio space? Why wouldn't we get so big that we make our own studio?
Where would we make our own studio? I don't think any podcast owns their own studio.
We would make it in our studio room.
Oh, yeah. A studio room is much different than a studio. I was thinking about like a production studio, like standalone building.
I don't know. Maybe it is. It's like a tiny house, except it's a studio.
I don't know. This may be a bold prediction of mine, but I predict the podcasts die out in the next 10 years.
You think
so? Like radio.
Why?
I don't know. I'm sure some new medium of like chat shows or whatever is going to come out and it will like shift. Plus there's so many podcasts like ours that are like what I like to refer to as rinky dink podcasts that like no one's really listening to. Like we will eventually stop recording these.
No. How dare you say that?
I'm just trying to be realistic.
I don't think we will. I think we'll just go forever.
I mean, we went like 3 months without posting one.
Yeah,
that's
just going to quickly turn into
6 months.
But we are posting.
It's going to, like, as soon as it starts becoming annoying that we're paying Apple Podcasts an annual fee to post these.
We're not paying Apple Podcasts. We're paying whoever the host is.
Podbean.
Podbean.com. Podbean.com.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I beg of you to differ.
What? Grovel, get on your knees.
I am here begging you.
Maybe then I'll change my mind.
To differ your opinion. I think that podcasts are here to stay.
That's like your side job.
True. That's true.
You pray it's here to stay.
But The only thing that I think would take its place is talk shows that are fully video recorded. And even then, if you look at the views of...
What do you mean fully video recorded?
I guess like videoed.
Like the talk shows that already exist?
Yeah, like, well, talk shows that already exist. If you look at that guy, Joe Rogan.
Okay.
If you look at him and his YouTube following, if he even has a YouTube anymore. I don't know how that works. But there are people like him who record all of their stuff, video and audio. I think there will be something like that. But I think that there is always... But that is on the preface that people at some point want to and are able to watch video while they are doing other things.
Right.
So, like me, listening to podcasts while mowing the lawn. I'm not going to watch a video while mowing the lawn.
Right.
So there will always be something where it is a pure audio form.
That's touche. Yeah, that makes sense.
Of media.
Right.
Driving. I think some people are like,
some people watch videos while driving.
I know, and they're sketch.
It's very dangerous.
But other people have been like, well, once everything's self-driving, then we're going to move to videos. But another hot take, maybe unpopular opinion.
Isn't a self-driving car just a taxi?
I don't know.
It's just a taxi, but the driver's a computer.
Yeah, maybe.
You just own that taxi.
Yeah, could be. But what I was going to say is that I would still rather listen to audio media and then look at the other drivers, whether they're driving or not.
What
are you going to be doing while driving if you don't
have
to drive?
Reading a book.
Yeah, you could read a book.
Right. I don't get car sick when I read in the car, so that's an option for me. That's not an option for you.
I'll be reading, listening to my audiobook. Hold on, one more thought on that. Listening to my audiobook or my podcast, and I'll be looking at the others, trying to figure out what they're doing while they're not driving, but also commuting.
Because don't like a very boring pastime.
Don't you ever just like look to the side when you're in the passenger seat and just watch the people who are in the car next to you?
No, because they're usually going too fast. What I usually do is really like when if I'm listening to music, and this happened more when I was a child, is that I would stare off the window and pretend I was in those movie montages where someone is like driving away like to a new city in a car.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like you make that like the main character effect.
Yeah.
And imagine your life in the main character of a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did that before.
Cool.
And by before, I mean, I've did that. I've cool. done that multiple times.
I get it. That is exactly what I'm talking about.
If they were to make a movie of our lives, we're going to pivot for a second. Who, like out of the current actors we know today, who do you think would play us in the story of us? Hear me out. For you, I think, because Kevin Bacon's too old for you. We can't do Kevin Bacon. But let me look up this guy's name. I think the guy who played, he played Elton John in the Elton John movie. What was that called? Rocket Man? Let me look it up.
Yeah, maybe. Tiny Dancer. Man.
Taron Egerton. I think he could play you.
You think Taron could?
Yeah, I think he could play you.
I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe not.
Maybe.
I don't know, sort of. As I show
not
the
at
picture.
All. Not, well, not
it can't
at
be
all.
An exact copy.
Yeah.
We can't play ourselves in the movie.
But I don't.
Okay.
You're right. We can't.
You don't know enough celebrities to make this game fun.
Yeah. I don't know enough celebrities. I mean.
Do you think it would be a comedy or a drama?
Well, that's a hard question. I think that.
Or a rom-com.
I think it would probably be Tom Holland playing me.
What?
Yeah, I think so. Because I'm a little dorky, a little fast and running
right?
like.
Y'all just aren't the same build.
I think we are.
Tom.
Maybe.
But then that would make me, that just dropped the actresses that could play me to like significantly younger actresses. And I just don't know enough younger actresses.
Okay. Fine. Tom Holland, pick number one. Pick number two, Mark Ruffalo.
Mark Ruffalo. It's only because I told you I had a crush on him growing up.
What? You said that?
Yeah. I'm a huge Mark Ruffalo fan. And then I saw him on Broadway in this play by Arthur Miller, who's a fantastic playwright. And it wasn't that good. It was Mark Ruffalo, and it was Scarlett Johansson, and it was Clive Owen, which were like stacked cast, right? Yeah. Scarlett Johansson was terrible in this play. She was, and I hear me say this, she's a great actress. It's just, I think seeing that, it was the first time I ever saw like movie actors in a stage play before. And it really is a different kind of acting, like stage acting versus movie acting. So maybe she just wasn't used to the stage acting thing. It just did not, or I was just way too set on the fact that this is Scarlett Johansson that was hard for me to see her in any other role.
Stages are scary.
They're different, man.
They'll get you.
They're different.
They jump scare you.
Oh my gosh.
But going back to that, yeah, I have no idea.
Okay.
No idea.
That was a fun thought experiment.
We could have Ryan Gosling play me. And for you, it could be the redhead lady.
What redhead lady?
You know, it would be like La La Land, except taking place in Dallas.
Oh, okay.
And we would get married in the end and be happy.
And it would just
be happy with our lives.
Because we're not now. That made it sound like it went all downhill from there.
I mean, for them in that movie, it did.
Yeah, it was a terrible
movie. Their lives were terrible.
I really did hate
that. Well, I guess they weren't terrible, but
I guess she ended up happy. He was just sad.
Was she happy, though?
Or did he own the nightclub?
He owned the nightclub.
Okay. But she got married and had a kid with some random dude.
Yeah, but she didn't seem happy about it.
None of them seemed happy about it.
Yeah.
What was even the point of that movie?
I think the point is that
don't give up on your dreams.
No, the point was that living in LA is kind of not cool. That's what I got from it. Hollywood, more like boring.
I will say this, that movie coming out was the first and and truly the last time I've ever actually heard of Hollywood referred to as La La Land. So I was very confused as to like where the title was coming from. And they're like, oh yeah, La La Land, Hollywood. I was like, I've never heard it called this at all.
Never.
Ever. And I've seen the Oscars like every year. You'd think they would have mentioned it at least on the Oscars, on Hollywood's biggest night.
Yeah, for real.
Anyway.
Well, enough bashing famous people.
We didn't bash anyone.
We bashed all of them. Enough trying to bring them down to, you know, normal people level. Let's talk about the news, because that's what we talk about.
Oh.
We talk about the hard-hitting news.
Did you bring anything to talk about?
No, I assumed you did.
I do have things to talk about, none of which are news stories.
Good.
Or articles.
Let's talk about the things that Allie wants to talk about.
I got really excited. It's like, oh, yay, Joe brought some stuff. No, okay. I have.
I don't bring news articles.
I have two things to talk about, and I'm going to be real honest, I'm not really sure how to like segue into them. So we're going to just bear with me here, because tonight is all about things I like to talk about.
What?
Which I'm just, you're just going to have to go
That's
with
weird.
It. Why is it weird?
I'm joking.
Okay. So I've been listening to this podcast and listening to this audiobook lately. And the podcast, let me get the name of it before. Okay. And this will all be in the show notes. The podcast is, it's a Gospel Coalition podcast called Post-Christianity, ? At the end, if you want to make sure you find it. And then the one of the co-hosts of this podcast, name is Andrew Wilson, and he wrote the book Remaking the World, How 1776 Created the Post-Christian West, which I'm doing the audiobook of. And it's very interesting. But one of the one of the main points of the book is like how you and I, Joe and Allie, right here in this moment in 2023 in
Dallas,
I was like,
Texas.
Do I say, yeah, we said Dallas, Texas. The way we view the world and things that we take for granted are radically different than how people even like 100 years ago viewed the world. Honestly, even 50 years ago.
You mean like energy?
I mean, that's like an aspect of it. But like, I mean, at a grander scale, like the way...
Dispensationalism?
No. The way like the ancients viewed the world, right? The
Stoics.
It's radically different than how you and I see the world. Like, you know, they...
Like Aeropostale.
What? Like they just fundamental belief the earth is flat. That was, and we're not going to get into modern flat earthers right now. But every single ancient assumed that the earth was flat. That was not something that they questioned. They typically assumed like the spiritual beings were within it, were like, you know, within all things. That's like why they worshiped the god of water and the god of whatever, blah, blah, blah.
And trees.
And trees and like all that stuff. And then like fast forward to like the 1500s. And the way people in the 1500s viewed the world was radically different than the Romans, for example. I don't know. Just that concept is really interesting to me. And so there's two things I want to talk about for that. Hopefully that was a good... You get what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
Like the way that we think, what we think and what we take for granted, which you may need to like, you know, go have a long walk with a cup of tea and kind of figure that out, is not what people have taken for granted for all of time. It's changed based on technology, based on knowledge, based on religion. I mean, like pre-Martin Luther, it was just the Catholic Church, right? It was not like Protestantism wasn't even a thing. So all these things. So that's one thing. And so I'm also reading this other book, which I never used to do. I don't usually read books, multiple books at the same time, but I'm living it up in 2023. Call me crazy. I don't even remember what the name of this book is, but I'll put in the show notes. I just found it for $3 in the clearance section of Half Price Books, and it's like Old World Meets the New World. Like it's some like college lecture series from the 1960s from some like King's College in London. Anyway, it's about the social history of Europe at the time of discovering America. So that just right there, I was interested in, because again, I'm thinking a lot about like, well, hey, like again, how I see the world is different from how other people Before I Saw the World.
Yeah.
And what I found really interesting is that it was saying that when the Americas were discovered, right, apparently no one in Europe cared. And I thought that was hilarious because I was always under the assumption that it was like the biggest thing ever, right? And so it's talking about in this book how like people cared, like it was like, you know, they knew about it, but it was so counter to how the fact that another world existed was so outside of their realm of thinking and their worldview that they preferred not to think about it because it like threatened to unravel what like just concepts that they held most. For example, it was talking a lot about how this was like the first real test against Christianity at the time, is that this other world existed, which I thought was funny because like it's almost like people in that time reacted to the New World and like the indigenous peoples of the New World, like you and I and the Christians of today would react to like us discovering aliens. And I just found that fascinating.
Okay.
But, like, is that not interesting? Like, they, I don't know. So, like, what are we just going to keep on being, you know, is life just, we're just going to keep on getting our boundaries tested? Or why do discoveries like this freak us out so much, Joe? Tell me. I must know.
Why do discoveries freak us out?
Because obviously Christianity is still around and it didn't, like, take, like, we, I don't know. I just find it, the concept of, like, being so set in, because obviously as Christians, like, we know there are essentials that we know are to be true. And, like, you know, they stand outside of time, for lack of a better word. But at Christians of that day, again, thought the world was flat, thought that there was no other land masses outside of Europe and Africa and Asia, and that those, that was all the people. And then they, now all of a sudden they're thrust with the information. That was not a good word. They were introduced to the information. They're like, no, everything you've ever been taught is wrong. There's a completely other land with completely other people who have never even heard of Christ before. Like, that would be a kind of jarring, right?
Yeah, I think so.
How would you, what would you think, Joe? What do you think about these new things? What would you think if we discovered aliens right now? Would it not put you in a moral quandary?
No, I don't think so.
Why not, you weird robot?
So I think that there's a few different things that you have to think about.
Mm-hmm.
One being the whole context and setting of the Bible and Christianity and what the purpose of the Bible was and really what it is. It was written for the Jewish people to understand kind of God's viewpoint, why they were created, why all of it was created, and what our response should be and who God is, like what, how, why, all of that stuff, really explaining God. And so the idea of a new world, people who don't necessarily know God, people who are, for lack of a better term, unchurched, that don't, have never heard of God from the Judeo-Christian viewpoint, I think is not necessarily antithetical to the Bible. And I would say that's the same with aliens. Aliens are, it, and this is, maybe this is not true. Maybe this is me postulating wrongly, but even if there are aliens, and even if they are smart beings, meaning they can think for themselves,
right,
and
beings.
Yeah, meaning they're intelligent, that doesn't necessarily mean that they that doesn't necessitate that they are created in God's image.
What do you think it means to be created in God's image?
I think it means that we, I don't know exactly.
I'm glad you said that, because that people have been debating question. That forever.
I do think it is more in the spiritual realm, being created in God's image talks about the spiritual. Like,
I see what you're saying.
The fact that we're bipedal, smart animals that can think for ourselves and build furniture and make really good food, like, and we enjoy that. I don't think that is what makes us. Not those specific acts are not what makes us in God's image. It is the why behind that. Like, wanting to create things, wanting to share that beauty and that love and the excitement of seeing, taking what is chaos in whether it's furniture or whether it's raw meat and raw vegetables and turning that into something that people find enjoyment out of. I think those are the kind of things that when we say we're made in God's image, I think that is more a better representation of right. what it is to be in God's image.
Right. And what I think is interesting is that there were some arguments made when we were introduced to, like, Americas and the indigenous peoples, that they were not made in God's image. And they were not, like, part of, like, the same. I mean, you have historically speaking, there's, like, the whole curse of Ham thing where, like, black people were, like, spawn of Satan. And there have always been these arguments to, like, dehumanize people as well. So, hypothetically speaking, one could argue it would be possible for us to do that with aliens, too.
Could be.
Boom. Sci-fi movie.
But who knows? Maybe they are made in God's image. I don't know. No idea.
Okay, I got a little bit off track, but like, wait, so sorry. I told you I didn't know how to weave this together. But the book that I was reading, it talks about how in the West we're weirder. And so that means that it stands for we're Western, we're educated, we're industrialized, we're rich, and we're democratic. And those are things that have never, like, existed before, like, the West was born. I mean, like, obviously money existed, but the fact that, like, the poorest people in America are still wealthier than, like, the majority of people in other countries, and how we all, for the most part, we are all literate is a huge thing that like, you know, again, 500 years ago, not everybody was literate, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it made me ask the question, because this book is also criticizing some of these things. A lot of these things it's saying
we should not be reading.
No. Well, the crux of the argument of the book is essentially that Christianity and, like, the ideals instilled by Christians are what created the West the way it's what created individualism. It's what created, like, all the
capitalism.
Sure. But it's like we're now seeing it, like, there are also bad things in that too. Like, so it's like Christianity has instilled these values in these Western countries for good, but also we're seeing the negative repercussions of that, and, like, hyper-individualism, or, I mean, you could argue hyper-capitalism, or
not only hyper-capitalism, also hypo-capitalism.
Right. But then it made me think of the question, and this, again, like, this may be the wrong question to ask, but because everyone's talking about worldview, right? Everyone's like, what's the right worldview? This is culture, this is the church, this is faith, this is, like, secularism, blah, blah, blah. And, like, the more and more I read about this stuff, the more and more entwined everything is. And it just makes me ask the question of, like, what is the right worldview? Like, is individualism the right worldview? Is it – because, like, the Hebrews in the Old Testament were not individual people. they were highly it was tribal and it was patriarchal and it was tribal and it was clans, et cetera, et cetera. So
they didn't even have a word for individual.
They didn't?
Don't know. Gotcha. Zing.
But what is the right worldview? Or is that asking the wrong question? And is there never a right? There's just always the time that we're
What in. Is a worldview?
It's the way you view the world.
Is it though?
Like I think like for example, I'm like, yeah, like I know who I am and God made me special, right? And I'm an individual human being and I have something special to bring to the world. That statement right there would not have existed 300 years ago. That's not how people thought about themselves. And you can see that, I mean, like we would critique like where hyper-individualism was like, well, I can do whatever I want. It doesn't matter. And there's no rules or whatever. And so there's always like a pro and a con of individualism. But so like, is that the wrong way? Should we not be thinking about ourselves in individual terms? Again, am I asking the wrong question? These things keep me up at night, Joe. I need to know the right answer. Yes, I want to know the right. They really do. I ponder this stuff a lot.
Why?
Because it's just I want. I think it's because when I'm neurotic, but I want to know what the right answer is. Like I want. Is there like? This is my question. Is there a right way for us to be in this world as followers of Christ? Or is it completely, are there like a bazillion right ways depending on the time and place that we are put into history? That's my question.
I think there is a correct way. I think there is a way that you can look at the world and have the absolute right response that is predicated on the fact that you are fully 100% in line with God's will. And we have sin in this world. We are all sinners. So is it possible to actually be 100% fully aligned with God's will? I would argue no. Therefore, I don't think that even if we are trying our best,
we'll never
actually get it right. I mean, well, let me take a step back. In some situations, there is probably a pretty obvious correct answer. So yeah, we may get it right or mostly right some of the time, but I think there's also a lot of gray for us and a lot of gray that has been added due to sin. So I think that prior to sin, it very much was black and white. It was easy. The easier. But now because of sin and because we have the ability to make our own choices, I think it is harder to make correct choices. And the fact that you can look at any election and all of a sudden you're like, oh, well, there's no good choice. I just have to choose someone. The fact that there isn't an obvious candidate that you can feel consciously good about voting for with and 100% feel good about voting for them. That in itself shows that in some situations we are so far away as a body, as humans, we're so far away from what God wants of us that sometimes there won't be correct choices.
I want to go back to the very beginning of that, where you mentioned like there are situations where there's the obvious right option. Can you tell me what those obvious options are so I can write it down for future reference?
Yeah, yeah. You find a baby in a dumpster, still alive, still crying. the obvious answer is you go and you pick up that baby.
Right. But this is what I find fascinating. That was not the obvious answer pre-Christianity. The obvious answer pre-Christianity was you let that baby die in that dumpster. It's not my problem. And that is what I find fascinating.
Yeah, because that's ludicrous.
Because it seems unfathomable to us. But that was totally normal back then. I mean, child sacrifices were totally normal.
But I think there's also a level of not understanding the importance and the value of life, even from a, I think from a simplistic point of view, even think of that mouth that you have to feed from a work standpoint. You have to feed them, but they are also a value to continuing your name, continuing whatever trade your family does, continuing on with from a larger perspective, society and humans as a whole. So that is a, if that is what you see, you're like, okay, I need to continue my family and I need to continue our culture, whether that was from Athens or Rome or other cultures and tribes and areas. I think there was a more, I would think that would be a more communal and a more community-centric view. So why that baby would have been left, I don't know why. But even now, I look at it, and maybe this is a moving baseline syndrome, but I would see that and be like, that doesn't make sense that you would leave that baby, because that is another warm body that is adding to your numbers.
Right, but what if it was a girl baby and you didn't want to deal with like a dowry and she wasn't going to carry on your family name because she was going to get married off to a different tribe and you don't need any more girl babies.
Yeah.
So we're just
that could
like,
be a problem.
Bye, girl baby.
Yeah. See that could be a problem.
Yeah.
But what if nobody in your little house group knows how to sew? That baby could learn. Although somebody's got a teacher.
What's a house group?
I don't know. Words I made up. Two words I smashed together right now.
Right. Okay. I could literally talk about, for those listening, you're probably like, I have absolutely no idea what they're talking about right now. This is like, again, I think about this stuff way too much. I really should have paid more attention in the one philosophy class I took in college. Cause that's where I just, who knows what I would have learned if I went back now.
Philosophy.
But anyway, if anyone wants to chat about
philosophizing,
conditioning and, I think the problem is I read Brave New World again, and that really messed up my mind. I think that's what it was. It really shook me to the core reading it again.
Sounds like it's not a good book.
No, it's so good. I highly recommend it.
Sounds like we should.
But it was just like, no. it's fantastic. But yeah, it really messed me up, man. Because like, what if we're just in a society that's conditioning us to think one way, and the right way is a completely different way? But we'll never know because we're conditioned to that society and we cannot fathom anything outside what we've been conditioned to believe.
Kind of like we're conditioned to think only a two-party system will work.
Is it because it's election day? Is that what's on your mind right now?
I'm just saying these are things that we've been conditioned to. But look at the UK. They've got
a bazillion parties.
They've got the Flaming Hot Cheetos party.
I don't know what that is, but that's a great example of like for them, it's completely normal to have a bazillion parties.
The crazy loony party.
Right. Side note, it is 9 o'clock, which means the polls closed an hour ago and they are going to start reporting which propositions got voted in or not. So that's
Do you think any of them got voted in?
I'm going to say that all the props that I wanted in probably are not going to get in. Maybe one of them will, because there were a couple bipartisan ones. And I think the props that I wanted to fail are probably going to pass. That's my prediction. But that usually happens every year. So
yeah,
I'm keeping my expectations low.
Yeah.
Okay. Back to philosophical conversations with Allie and Joe. So the last 15 minutes has been just a little snippet of what I think is interesting and what I spend my time reading about. If you want to get a little picture into Allie's mind, I do a lot of research. I read a lot of random history stuff. I'm working on some side projects right now, and I've come across a common thread between some powers that be who are influential, let's say. I'm not going to name names, but they just started mentioning this book. And I was like, what is this book? Like, everyone keeps on mentioning this book. Side note, I've also been really fascinated by America and especially Christianity's obsession with the nuclear family. Because, again, like, nuclear families are very new. Like, think, like, the last 100 years. Before that, nuclear families were not the standard family. So I just think it's interesting that we're really, like, hyper-focused on something that's very recent, relatively speaking. So anyway, I looked
up this
book. It's
because of van life.
What?
I got you.
I don't even know what that means. Anyway, this book is called Family and Civilization by Carl Zimmerman. I read basically the smart notes of it. And so if you feel strongly about this book and you think that I'm misrepresenting it, please let me know and we will correct it or invite you on the podcast to discuss it with us.
Yeah, come on the pod.
But I just want to share this one quote, which I've read to you before, but we didn't discuss it. Because I just found it quite shocking, and I would love to discuss it. So we're all about discussing things. And to be fair, we want to be charitable to this. We're not going to rip it apart. We're going to think of the pros and the cons.
I'm going to rip it apart.
Discuss it. Practice healthy discourse. Are you ready for this lengthy quote?
Are you ready for it?
I'm trying to, like, I keep hearing myself, like, smacking. I'm trying to stop it. Yeah. Okay. Quote. Indeed, the primary theme of family and civilization is fertility. Oh, I'm sorry. This is a quote I disagree with the quote, but this is a quote from a positive review of it. So again, I'm trying to be non-biased here. The primary theme of the book Family and Civilization is fertility. Zimmerman underscores the three functions of familism as articulated by historic Christianity: fidelity, childbearing, and indissoluble unity. While describing at length the social value of premarital chastity, the health-giving effects of marriage, the cost of adultery, and the social devastation of divorce, Zimmerman zeroes in on the birth rate. He concludes that, quote, "We see ever more clearly the role of proles, or childbearing, as the main stem of the family," end quote. The very act of childbearing, he notes, quote, "creates resistances to the breaking up of the marriage," end quote. In short, quote, "the basis of familism is the birth rate. Societies that have numerous children have to have familism. Other societies, those with few children, do not have it," end quote. This gives Zimmerman one easy measure of social success or decline, the marital fertility rate. A familistic society, he says, would average at least 4 children born per household. So
I've got a really important question.
Okay, ask away.
Do you think he's related to the Bizarre Foods guy, Andrew Zimmer?
Who the heck? I don't know. This was written in the 40s, like post-war, like right after the war ended.
Ooh.
So anyway, background.
Maybe it's his dad.
Right. Background is there is a strong.
Or his granddaddy.
Right. So basically this guy's saying, like, the downfall of civilization is dependent upon the strength of the family, which, I mean, yes. I've heard that a lot before. I grew up learning
focus
that.
On the family.
I love families. Hear me say this.
Families are good.
And do you and I have already, just on the basis of a clear reading of that quote, we do not have 4 children in our family.
We're failing.
Did I feel a little bit attacked by this quote? Well, yes, I did. In the sense of, it went to the juggler. And we are 3 children behind the ideal number of children, which is a whole nother conversation. But I don't understand why people think that the nuclear family, like the breakup of the family equals the downfall of a civilization. That's like a really simple, a very simple way to destroy a civilization, you know?
Well, I hear what you're saying. I think it comes down to wanting to simplify and understand. So the idea of causation versus correlation, to me, what could be happening is that he is saying, oh, let's look at the number of marital birth rate that is occurring, and let's compare that to the societies. And while that may not be the actual reason, it may be an indicator. So once that starts dropping, maybe that is an indicator that other things are actually happening in that society,
right,
which therefore means the society is going to fail.
Right. Because he goes on later in the book to basically talk about, like, he like juxtaposes American culture. And again, this was written right after World War II. So some things have happened since then, and compares it to like Roman and Greek culture, and like tracks the fall of Rome with the what he predicts will be the fall of America. And in his defense, he was correct. He predicted some things that came true. Our birth rate has significantly declined. People are getting married a lot later in life, if at all. Divorce rate is super, super high. And so based on like what he's predicting, he would say that we are very close to the downfall and breakup of American civilization as we know it. Based on those factors.
Yeah, that's interesting. But I think there are more things that need to be considered there, because families with four children nowadays, that is a very, very hard thing to do in terms of financially. And just in terms of space and functionality and just everything logistically about four children is pretty tough.
Right.
And I'm not going to bring in any facts or figures or anything here, but I would venture to say, and besides that, there, I think society as a whole, there is a lot of help coming from parents into their children, whether those children are married or not. So if you are talking about the nuclear family being parents and children, and only that one generation there, I kind of feel like that is being blown up from this perspective as a whole, because there are grandparents who are helping the now parents who are helping their children. And really, those are the only ones that I would postulate can really handle 4+ children at this time.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So the whole idea of the nuclear family, the idea is great and you may see it as that, but in reality, any input, whether financial or whether property or whether any type of strong familial bond, and like as simple as free babysitting on a semi-regular basis, that is no longer a nuclear family. That is a family that has generational input.
Right.
And I think that is, it's almost like a convenient overlooking of what the family unit is.
Right.
And what's actually going into the family unit.
Well, and that's why I think it's interesting, because if the review, which again was a positive review, is like the solution to the problem is childbearing and more children, or a consistent number of children, to me it doesn't seem like the concern is like that those children are flourishing in society. To me it's just like we just want bodies. And even like I guess the term proles was used, which is a trigger word for me, because proles is what is used in
Brave New World.
It's not Brave New World. I think it's used in 1984. Like, proles is like the peasants of society, that like, are like your labor, essentially.
Good.
So I don't really have a lot of good connections with that word. But yeah, to your point, but also to his point, I would even argue that like the breakup of society is not the dissolution or the
dissolution.
Thank you. The dissolution of the nuclear family. I would say it's just community as a whole. And I was talking to one of the moms at Pickup Line the other day, and how we were both talking about how they're like, we don't have like community centers anymore. We don't have like shared, like you don't like run into like your neighbors at the grocery store. Like you don't have like, y'all all aren't going to the village square to celebrate liturgical holidays, or like you're not
a harvest festival.
Like we don't have these consistent like connector points with the people around us. And granted, we live in a city, so it's a little bit different. There's just so many people.
I do want to go to a harvest festival.
Right. Or like a barn raising.
I don't think people are raising barns anymore.
But to your point, like most people do not live next to their parents. So like not all grandparents are living close to their children. And then also like generations before, grandparents, once they get to a certain age, they would move in with their children and their children would take care of them in their old age. That doesn't really happen anymore.
Yeah.
Instead, you're putting them in nursing homes. So that's breaking familial bonds. And, you know, to me, I'm seeing more of like there is that communal aspect that is super necessary for civilizations to flourish. We would probably be less divisive with each other if we had more connecting points and more, you know, similar places where we can meet.
And I would add one more thing.
Yeah, add it.
One of the key points that was made during our premarital classes, and also, I mean, maybe it was just that, the premarital classes, was the fact that you and I are the first and foremost connection in our family, and the children are almost a ministry for us. So we are here to raise them, help them flourish in society. For us, hopefully we want Jake to know Christ and love Christ and accept him as his Lord and Savior. But once he leaves the house, at some point he is going to leave and cleave,
right?
And he is going to start his own family. So the idea that, and I think that starts to maybe break down or change the point of what he was saying. But to me, there was always that almost a warning or something saying, be cognizant of how much you prioritize your children over your relationship and your marriage, because that it is very possible that after your children are out of the house, then all of a sudden you realize you don't have anything in common anymore, and then you leave.
Right.
And that creates a completely different type of breaking of the family and a new type of dysfunction versus like having a divorce when you're 5 or 15 or something like that. It ends up being a different challenge. But I think that is, it's almost like, okay, what is the nuclear family? How long is the nuclear family? Where does that stat
right
come from? And how does that change as your role changes in life?
Right. Because based on what you just said, the nuclear family, like this, in the stages of the nuclear family, there must always be a breaking up of the nuclear family to beget another nuclear family.
Yeah.
So it's just like a consistent breakup of nuclear families.
Dude,
and that's not because of culture or whatever or downfall.
It's because of fission.
Yeah.
It's the way nuclear reactions work.
Exactly. It's just how, by the nature of how, and hear me say, this is a uniquely American family setup.
Yeah.
I mean, or I guess like maybe say West, but you can say Western, yeah. Like
weird.
Nuclear setup. Yeah, it's a weird. It is.
It's a weird thing.
It's a weird. See, I told you it would all tie
weird.
In. see, you didn't think it would. Look, it's all tying in. It is a weirder thing.
But you know what's really weird about it?
What?
I don't see too many nuclear families in Austin. Oh.
In Austin?
You know, because Austin's weird.
Oh.
Keep Austin weird.
You really had to put that together for me. I didn't get it.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But, yeah, I don't. Yeah, I just think that's interesting.
Yeah.
I also don't think that everyone should have four children.
Four children is just so many.
I don't think there are some people who I know who I do not think are good parents and should stop having children.
Now, I will say, I appreciate the higher number because I, as a middle child,
right,
I lament the day that the middle child goes extinct.
It will never go extinct. We're not in China where they have like a one-child policy.
You know what's funny about that, though? China's doing great.
Well, that's because they took away the one-child policy.
They're doing fantastic with the people.
Let's not compliment China.
We can compliment whoever we want.
This podcast is going to get taken down by the feds.
Just because I said China is not hurting for population?
Well, sorry, to go back to what I thought, like, the isn't it to keep up with population, it's 2.5 children? Or where does that 2.5 number come from?
Yeah, it's like something like that.
And that's just to keep up with population?
No, that's, I think, to grow
population.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe okay. That is to keep up because there will be untimely death.
Right. So if we all had four children per family unit,
we'd be growing.
That would be like almost doubling.
Yep.
That would be a lot.
It would be.
And are we not in a population crisis?
Some people think we are.
Whatever. You think we are in a population crisis.
Some people think we're in a population crisis, but not that we're overpopulated. People are worried that we're going to be underpopulated far too soon because of the birth rates.
Wait, you told, but you are, I'm confused. Stop.
Yeah, no,
I don't want to hear about other people. I want to hear about Dr. Joe.
I think we do have too many people.
Okay, thank you. But based on what research?
What do you mean based on what research?
Why do you feel that way if you were just going on about everyone else?
No, that's what other people say.
Who are other people?
Elon.
Oh, my God.
And other people talk about the population crisis that we're going to have.
Do you think that the population crisis or whatever you want to call it is a split issue by party at this point? Like, are there no nuanced takes? Okay.
No, I think there's a lot to it because you've got the people who are just looking at the population numbers and more importantly, not the numbers, but the birth rates versus the death rates. So it's more of like the derivative of population growth. Because we're still growing, but we are dropping in the growth rate, which means eventually we're going to overturn right. And start plummeting.
Right.
That's what people are concerned about. But then you have to ask the question of why. Why is population and population growth changing? Is that related to the food we're eating? Is it related to plastics?
Economic policy.
Is it related to economic policy?
You think it's plastics?
Is it? Yeah.
What?
There are so many people who say it has to do with plastic leaching.
But you and I are
and
not
chemicals.
Having more children because of plastics.
No, I'm talking about
mortality rate.
Mortality and drop in fertility.
Oh, like increase in miscarriages and infertility? That
kind
of thing?
And less swimmers in the
That's
in the stuff.
That's just infertility. You could just say male infertility.
I literally said infertility, and then you started saying, oh, miscarriages?
That's a form of infertility.
Yeah.
Just say male infertility.
The other form is less productive men.
Because of plastic.
From a sexual standpoint.
I will say this, and again, I freely...
But hold on, let me finish that thought.
Okay.
The whole idea there is that there are a lot of why behind production or human growth rate.
Right.
That is the big thing that I think there isn't necessarily a bipartisan line on because there's so many different options as to why we are decreasing our growth rate.
We need more data is what you're telling me.
I think we don't know exactly why.
Right.
It could very well be personal choices.
Right. This is what I think is, again, I am a cynic and I am skeptical and I tend to be a negative Nancy at times.
True.
Wow. Wow. You were a little bit too quick to jump into that. Hear me say this, though. We have had mass changes in population multiple different times over the course of known human history, right?
We have.
Like the Black Death.
But.
The baby boom.
More often, it has been increases. So there have been a few.
Except for like natural disasters.
There's been a few pretty nasty plagues.
And wars.
But they really haven't been that bad. Like the mass casualties from World War II, something like a couple million people. Which, yeah, that's a lot of people.
Yeah, but there's I'm just now learning about like a mass massacre in like ancient China of like 30 million people.
30 million?
Yeah, I'm going to look it up. I saw that the other day, or maybe it was in this book I was reading, but I was like, how have I never heard about this? That's a fudge ton amount of people.
But you have to realize right now there are 8 billion people. So it would be so hard to have any single event really put a dent in the number of people, except for something generational, like one generation chooses to not have any babies. Well, one generation would ultimately kind of
So the fact that we are choosing not to have children is
like that is
odd.
Why that's scary.
That's interesting.
Because anything, any massive natural disaster, even if you look at a genocide, that it like it's weird to say, I recognize this, but any one unique group of people being wiped off the face of the earth is still small. It's not that big of a number of people, which is weird to think about.
I found it.
Okay.
Are you ready to have your mind blown?
Okay, let's hear it.
Worse than I thought. It's called the Great Leap Forward. It was an economic and social campaign within the People's Republic of China from 1958 to 1962.
Wow.
So this is very recent. It was led by the Chinese Communist Party, obviously. They launched a campaign to reconstruct the country from an agrarian economy into an industrialized society through the formation of people's communes. They decreed that efforts to multiply grain yields and bring industry to the countryside should be increased. Local officials were fearful of anti-rightist campaigns, and they competed to fulfill or overfulfill quotas, which were based on the exaggerated claims, collecting non-existent surpluses and leaving farmers to starve to death. Higher officials did not dare to report the economic disaster which was being caused by these policies, and national officials, blaming bad weather for the decline in food output, took little or no action. Millions of people died in China during the Great Leap, with estimates ranging from 15 to 55 million people, making the Great Chinese Famine the largest or second largest famine in human history.
Wow.
What was the other one?
1812.
Oh, I'm sorry. The Great Chinese Famine that happened in 1907 was probably worse.
Oh,
China,
okay.
You gotta get it together, man.
Yeah, so that's wild.
It's a lot of people.
But 55 million people out of 8 billion?
Okay, so I guess to go back to your point, it's not that... It's because we are choosing. That is the thing that is making it different.
Yeah.
Which, to Zimmerman's point, would be a unique issue.
Yeah.
Which I guess I need to go study ancient Rome some more. I don't remember that happening in Rome.
Yeah, I don't know anything about ancient Rome.
That means you and I are part of the problem.
Well, no. Not necessarily. I mean, to his point, yes, maybe. But notice that he talks about marital birth rates. So all we have to do is adopt three children who are not in a married household. Then we're good.
But that's not a birth rate. His expectation is that I push out three more children.
But his expectation, I think he's not cooking the numbers. I think he is conveniently ignoring anybody who's having children out of wedlock.
Oh, that's a good point. Because he does say to each family unit.
Yeah. So our family unit, if we end up adopting three more children.
That's a lot of kids.
It is. Which I still think is.
Too many.
It's still a lot of children.
I don't think I could equally show love to that many children. Or it would stress me out significantly. And I would feel like I was failing every day.
I'm sorry about that. I don't know what to say to that. But I think that goes back to that whole point of it's really tough. And more than likely, if you've got that many kids, you probably have additional help, whether it is a nanny or a grandparent or multiple grandparents or a community around you that acts like additional parents.
Well, that, I think that's something also that kind of makes me, what's that? I don't know the term. I'm really struggling with my words tonight. Bristle. Thank you. When reading this is that I feel like he's talking to like middle-class white people, for lack of a better term, because I feel like you hear plenty of people complain about like poor minorities having lots of children as being like a bad thing and being like a waste of like government resources and like a, you know, a drain on society. But if rich or like well-off people have large families, then it's considered like helpful to society. So to me, that's kind of like a double standard. If you're wanting everyone to have, like, if we're wanting to increase the marital birth rate, that should be an equal, like an equal opportunity thing. And it shouldn't be determined on what zip code you live in that makes your large family desirable or not.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a...
it's a very complicated issue.
It is. I think it also goes to his whole point of highlighting marital birth rate, because I think that's... I don't know the stats on it, so I'm not going to pretend to know, but I would think that that is... there are probably stats about marriages and single parent households and socioeconomic status that ultimately go into all of those things and thoughts that would also play into what he's saying, which is not a good answer or a good conclusion.
I have the most recent American fertility rate. Would you like to know it?
It is 1.97.
God, you're so smart. It's 1.7 births per female, which is below the replacement rate of 2.1 that is required for the U.S. population not to shrink without increases in immigration. There you go. We are not at 2.5 anymore.
We are a shrinking society.
Wow.
What's the world birth rate?
Oh, okay. Let me see. World. Global marital birth rate.
Global marital birth rate or global birth rate?
Oh, okay.
I mean, you can do both.
Global birth rate. Oh, okay. Worldwide fertility has fallen from an average of 5 births per woman in 1950. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they survived. It's just 5 births.
Correct.
To 2.3 births per woman in 2021, an indication of the increasing control that individuals, particularly women, are able to exercise over their reproductive lives. Overall fertility is projected to fall to 2.1 births per woman by 2050. That's interesting. I thought like Africa and South America would have balanced this out. anyway, that's a whole nother episode talking about like how birth control or religion or
what
all that things.
Is stopping all the births. Bom, bom, bom.
So I will say, as we finish this off, go watch the movie Children of Men with Clive Owen. It's like a dystopian movie that came out maybe like, gosh, like 15 years ago now. It's so interesting. But basically all the women can't have babies anymore. Babies. And it's like what would happen to society. And it's so good.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for coming on this journey with me.
Yeah. Yeah. And thank you for bringing me on this journey. It has been fun. And thank you to our sponsor this week.
The fertility rate?
Our sponsor this week, I forgot who the sponsor was. I was going to remember.
Podbean.
Yeah. The sponsor this week is Podcasts.
Just Podcasts. Podcasts
and Podbean, who doesn't sponsor our show at all. In fact, we pay them to host all of our episodes. But we keep churning them out for you, the audience. So, you know what? You're welcome. With that, I think it's time for But Here We Are Gonna Go. Bye.